Okay. I've been doing a series of talks on the Shushogi, which, as you know, and basically taking it a chapter at a time. Shushogi means what is meant by training and enlightenment. And there are five chapters that each goes into an aspect of what's important for a Buddhist in terms of practice. I've talked about the Shushogi before, and one of the things I've been trying to do this time is to just keep the focus very narrow on, you know, what's here in front of us. I'll read through the chapter and then talk about it more or less line by line. But one of the things has been occurring to me, it's really a human problem of language, is that it can lead you to think that somewhere else, in some other time, is more important than here, to where we are now. And so, you know, a good part of what meditation and training is about is recognizing that there is value in being here. And a lot of what the first chapter of the Shushogi is talking about when it says how the important thing for Buddhists is how to understand birth and death completely is to learn how not to avoid birth and death. And that really means not to avoid whatever turns up where you are. Not to become distracted by or whatever else is going on somewhere else, or, you know, it's good to be aware of what's going on, but how not to let it pull you away from where you are. So, in our first talk, in our discussion, we talked about, primarily about war, because it was what was in the news at that point, it just sprung up. And as I was thinking about that, you know, how does that relate to what it says in the first chapter? And one of the things that it says in the first chapter is basically, what do you do when you come face to face with impermanence? And that there's a fairly drastic example of impermanence, whether it's something happening to someone, you know, thousands of miles away, or whether it's just what you hear on the news that's disturbing. That's impermanence. And the important thing is not to avoid it, to learn to be still with it. And of course that leads naturally into what's in the second chapter, which is talking about contrition. How do you learn not to avoid birth and death? By learning how to accept what's here, what's in front of you, including disturbing and painful feelings. Sometimes disturbing feelings can be pleasure, you know, that sort of takes you out of your head. So contrition really comes down to, as it says in that chapter, to sitting up straight in the presence of the Buddhist and ancestor. So here I am, this is what I've done, how do I do better? And that's really the importance of contrition. How do I do the best I can? And when I see that there's room for improvement, how do I do better? And so coming face to face with impermanence leads naturally into contrition. And now contrition leads naturally into understanding what the precepts actually are. And that's the third chapter, which we're going to talk about today. So I'll read through it and then come back and we'll talk about it. Receiving the precepts. After recognizing our evil acts and being contrite, therefore, we should make an act of deep respect to the three treasures of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. For they deserve our offerings and respect in whatever life we may be wandering. the Buddhas and ancestors transmitted respect for the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha from India to China. If they who are unfortunate and lacking in virtue are unable to hear of these three treasures, how is it possible for them to take refuge therein? One must not go for refuge to mountain spirits and ghosts, nor must one worship in places of heresy, for such things are contrary to the truth. One must instead take refuge quickly in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, for therein is to be found utter enlightenment, as well as freedom from suffering. A pure heart is necessary if one would take refuge in the three treasures. At any time, whether during the Buddha's lifetime or after his demise, we should repeat the following with bowed heads, making gassho. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. We take refuge in the Buddha since he is our true teacher. We take refuge in the Dharma since it is the medicine for all suffering. We take refuge in the Sangha since its members are wise and compassionate. If we would follow the Buddhist teachings, we must honor the three treasures. This foundation is absolutely essential before receiving the precepts. The merit of the three treasures bears fruit whenever a trainee and the Buddha are one. Whoever experiences this communion will invariably take refuge in the three treasures, irrespective of whether he is a god, a demon, or an animal. As one goes from one stage of existence to another, the above-mentioned merit increases, leading eventually to the most perfect enlightenment. The Buddha himself gave certification to the great merit of the three treasures because of their extreme value and unbelievable profundity. It is essential that all living things shall take refuge therein. The three pure collective precepts must be accepted after the three treasures. These are: cease from evil, do only good, do good for others. The following 10 precepts should be accepted next: do not kill, do not steal, do not covet, do not say that which is untrue, do not sell the wine of delusion, do not speak against others, do not be proud of yourself and devalue others, do not be mean in giving either dharma or wealth, do not be angry, do not debase the three treasures. All the Buddhas have received and carefully preserved the above three treasures, the three pure collective precepts, and the 10 precepts. If you accept these precepts wholeheartedly, the highest enlightenment will be yours, and this is the undestroyable Buddhahood which was understood, is understood, and will be understood in the past, present, and future. Is it possible that any truly wise person would refuse the opportunity to attain to such heights? The Buddha has clearly pointed out to all living things that whenever these precepts are truly accepted, Buddhahood is reached, every person who accepts them becoming the true child of Buddha. Within these precepts dwell the Buddhas, enfolding all things within their unparalleled wisdom. There is no distinction between subject and object for any who dwell herein. All things, earth, trees, wooden posts, bricks, stones, become Buddhas once this refuge is taken. From these precepts come forth such a wind and fire that all are driven into enlightenment when the flames are fanned by the Buddha's influence. This is the merit of non-action and non-seeking, the awakening to true wisdom. The precepts are the lifeblood of the Buddhas. So they are the spiritual life of each of us and of our training and of our meditation. Receiving the precepts. So there is a sense here of something that you open yourself to and accept. So it's not just a rule that you make for yourself or a moral code. There's a sense of accepting it. From whom? From what is greater than self. You could say accepting it from your true self. But how is your true self separate from everybody else? And everybody else's true self. After recognizing our evil acts and being contrite, therefore, we should make an act of deep respect to the three treasures of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, for they deserve our offerings and respect in whatever life we may be wandering. Like many teachings in Buddhism, don't think of this too narrowly as just Buddhism in the ism sense. What is Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha? Well, Buddha is that which the ancient Buddhas have awakened to, that's still present. Dharma is the teaching that comes out of that. Well, what is there that we can't learn from? And Sangha is those who practice the Buddha's teaching. Who is there that doesn't in some way show Buddha nature if you look with care and so practice it? Yes, in one sense there are specifics to Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And don't think of it as exclusive or narrow. The three treasures are inclusive of everyone and everything. The Buddhas and ancestors, those who we can learn from through their experience, from people from the past, transmitted respect for the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha from India to China. Here again, India to China. India being that which seems to be remote and far away. China, in the way it's written here, being here. Here's where we are. So, the Buddhas and ancestors transmitted respect for the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha to here, where we are. If they who are unfortunate and lacking in virtue are unable to hear of these three treasures, how is it possible for them to take refuge therein? Yes, there are those whose minds are clouded, who don't seem to recognize the value of what is in fact most precious to everyone, to each of us, and who don't recognize that it's even possible to take refuge. One must not go for refuge to mountain spirits and ghosts, nor must one worship in places of heresy, for such things are contrary to the truth. One must instead take refuge quickly in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, for therein is to be found utter enlightenment as well as freedom from suffering. One must not take refuge, must not go for refuge to mountain spirits and ghosts. Now, I suppose historically, in Japan, this meant mountain spirits was part of Shinto religion, worshipping mountain spirits and ghosts, ancestor worship, places of heresy, teachings about love and light, that you don't have to be responsible for your actions. That's really what love and light comes down to, is irresponsibility, thinking you can be enlightened without having to accept the consequences of your actions or worry about your effects on yourself and others. So, for someone who wishes to practice Buddhism, it really means, as I read it, being respectful and grateful for your former religion, and at the same time not going back to it or trying to mix practices. Just take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. You can be grateful and respectful and understand the meaning and value of your former religion and still not sort of... Basically what he's saying here is don't stay on the surface of what doctrines and practices are about. Look for their depth, and you do that by turning a stream of compassion within. These things are contrary to the truth, in the sense of, you know, don't get involved in what's misleading. It leads you away from what will help you to turn the stream of compassion within. So take refuge quickly in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Don't dither and dally and say, well, maybe tomorrow. When you see that you can take refuge, take refuge. For therein is to be found utter enlightenment, as well as freedom from suffering. So, turning from contrition to what helps, what's enlightenment, but that which helps us to see things clearly and truly. What's freedom from suffering? Recognizing that we don't have to be controlled by our old habits and passions and karma. A pure heart is necessary if one would take refuge in the three treasures. In other words, do it sincerely. Do your best. Doesn't mean you have to be perfect, but try your best to take refuge. If you find that you're saying homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha while you're thinking about what you're going to have for lunch, well, bring your attention back and just keep trying. I wasn't picking anything out of anybody's head there, by the way. Pure heart is necessary if one would take refuge in the three treasures. At any time, whether during the Buddha's lifetime or after his demise, we should repeat the following with bowed heads, making gassho. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. Gather yourself. Show physically and in your spirit respect, reverence, trust. A lot of what taking refuge is about is saying, I put my trust in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And trust is fundamentally important to learning to understand what Buddhist teaching is. At any time, whether during the Buddha's lifetime or after his demise, times when you see and recognize Buddha, whether it be in a particular teacher or any other time when you recognize Buddha, times when it's not so clear, times when things are bright, times when they are dark. At any time, whether during the Buddha's lifetime or after his demise, we can still take refuge reverently and respectfully. We take refuge in the Buddha since he is our true teacher. We take refuge in the Dharma since it is the medicine for all suffering. We take refuge in the Sangha since its members are wise and compassionate. I think that speaks for itself. If we would follow the Buddhist teachings, we must honor the three treasures. This foundation is absolutely essential before receiving the precepts. What is that foundation but faith, showing trust? Before you take the precepts, it's important to recognize that there is that which is trustworthy, that's greater than ourselves. Otherwise, the precepts just become a code of conduct. And they can be valuable as a code of conduct, but they're the lifeblood of the Buddhas and ancestors. You can say precepts plural, you could just as easily say there's a precept that encompasses all of them. It's absolutely essential to have that trust, to honor the three treasures. The merit of the three treasures bears fruit whenever a trainee and the Buddha are one. Whoever experiences this communion will invariably take refuge in the three treasures, irrespective of whether he is a god, a demon, or an animal. Merit bears fruit whenever a trainee and the Buddha are one. Every one of us, to some degree, meditates naturally. Every one of us, to some degree, takes refuge naturally. And when we do that, whether we recognize it consciously or not, we are, you know, at one with the Buddha. So there is merit there. And it doesn't matter who we are, whether we're God, I think we're the greatest in the universe, or a demon, or an animal, whatever we may think of ourselves, there is merit there and we can truly take refuge. And of course, this is expansive in a way that shows that the teaching of the three refuges encompasses every kind of being, whether human or not, every kind of human being. It's not exclusive. As one goes from one stage of existence to another, the above-mentioned merit increases, leading eventually to the most perfect enlightenment. The Buddha himself gave certification to the great merit of the three treasures because of their extreme value and unbelievable profundity. It is essential that all living things shall take refuge therein. As one goes from one stage of existence to another, recognizes that even as training is fundamentally about putting our focus here and now, there is also that gradual work of training that we do over our whole lifetime. Who we were yesterday is one stage of existence. Who we are today, who we are tomorrow. The three treasures is always present and always in. There's always the opportunity to take refuge. And it leads eventually to the most perfect enlightenment. So this goes back to what we were saying about the chapter on contrition. The Buddhas and ancestors were as we are now, and we will be as they in the future. That's a guarantee. How long we take at it is to some degree up to us, and yet it's even that is not answerable to our personal will. So that, again, it comes down to faith, that if we do our best, if we try our best and keep trying, we will naturally improve. We'll get better at our training, and it will become a strength and a refuge to us. The Buddha himself gave certification to the great merit of the three treasures, because of their extreme value and unbelievable profundity, it is essential that all living things shall take refuge therein. I think that's just a way of saying don't underestimate them. And here it's saying it's essential that all living things shall take refuge therein. Again, don't think too narrowly of that in terms of isms, but just as we train, we begin to understand that we can help others to be at ease with themselves when they're not. And just simply by doing our training, we can help others even if we're unaware of actually that we're helping them. So that this is chapter really comes in two parts, and the first part is taking refuge in the three treasures. So it's the first part essentially is saying that before you take the precepts, trust that there's something greater than yourself. Put your trust in that. And then the precepts will become something that it's alive for you, and not just a code of judgment or a code of conduct, something that runs much deeper. The three pure collective precepts must be accepted after the three treasures. These are: cease from evil, do only good, do good for others. The three pure collective precepts. Pure because they show what a pure heart does naturally. Collective because they encompass all of the precepts. All of the precepts taken together show us how to refrain from or cease from doing evil, from doing what creates or perpetuates suffering. Doing only good, how we can do something about ourselves, doing something about ourselves so that we aren't causing or perpetuating suffering, and doing good for others, training together with others, and understanding that you must not separate yourself off from others, and that your intention should always be to help everyone and everything. I suppose you could say that ceasing from evil is coming face to face with impermanence, and doing only good is contrition, beginning to turn the stream of compassion into doing something about yourself, and doing good for others is what comes out naturally from those two, which is the spirit of the keeping of the precepts. That itself, keeping the precepts, is doing good for others. The following 10 precepts should be accepted next. 1. Do not kill. 2. Do not steal. 3. Do not covet. 4. Do not say that which is untrue. These are the four grave offenses, and I think there's a reason why those four are put first and in the order they are. the greatest way you can cause and perpetuate suffering is through killing. Stealing is, I wouldn't say it's better, and it certainly isn't great. Do not covet. Well, what does covetousness lead to but stealing, taking, greediness? More specifically, sometimes it's phrased as to not indulge in inappropriate or improper sexuality, in selfish sexuality, you could say. And do not say that which is untrue. Each of them, as all of them do, shows you how not to do harm to yourself as well as to others. So you can't really separate off. If you're killing someone or something, you're killing a part of yourself. You're killing the compassion in yourself in some way. Or you're killing the respect for someone. And likewise, each of the precepts has a subtlety to it, so it's not just about physical killing, it's about closing your heart to someone or something. You're saying that there are some people or some things that are not worthy of respect, or that are permanently evil and must always be despised. So, now number 5, do not sell the wine of delusion. 6, do not speak against others. 7, do not be proud of yourself and devalue others. Do not sell the wine of delusion. Literally, do not sell intoxicants. And also don't spread around intoxicating attitudes. And here again, it's talking about love and light. Do not spread around things that encourage irresponsibility. Do not speak against others. I think that the seriousness of that comes because often it's speaking against others that leads to an attitude which eventually leads to doing harm to others. Learn to restrain what you say, even if you're upset with someone or know that what they're doing is wrong. Be careful not to let that lead you to devaluing their life. Which of course comes, then you come to the next one. Do not be proud of yourself and devalue others. And here, you know, we all know about, you know, just sort of taking an attitude of despising others. But be devaluing others is not noticing them, or not thinking that what's going on in their life is important. They're not recognizing that they have their training to do and that it's not for you to tell them how they should do their training, or to think that somehow your way of practicing Buddhism is superior to their way of practicing Christianity or whatever religion or non-religion that they practice. Their lives are just as valuable as yours. Again, by being proud, you're harming yourself. And in another way, I already kind of said this, but do not be proud of yourself and devalue others. Don't try to undermine other people's faith by proselytizing Buddhism. Don't do that. Okay. 8, do not be mean in giving either dharma or wealth. 9, do not be angry. 10, do not debase the 3 treasures. This can be thought of, these final 3, as do not be greedy, do not be angry, and do not indulge in delusion. do not be mean in giving either dharma or wealth. Well, in this case, mean implies being stingy. It can also be mean in the sense of being harsh. And I think the primary implication here is do not be stingy, do not be greedy. In other words, be content, be compassionate. Find that place where greed converts into compassion. Do not be angry. Pretty clear, and yet it also encompasses being frustrated, being hot under the collar, even if you have a smile on your face. That's still anger. Most importantly, if you feel anger, don't act on it. Learn to disconnect, because that often the pride and anger actually go together here, you know. You're righteously angry. And then you act on it. And then you wish you hadn't, if you're lucky. Or if you have enough merit. Refraining from anger can be one of the most painful of the precepts to really keep. It hurts if you're angry and aren't going to act on it. There's a power and an impulse there. And it's also here very important not to just turn that anger on yourself. So here's another case where if you're angry, really make an effort just to be still. And if you're really angry about something, maybe step out of the room for a bit and take a deep breath. Or maybe it's time to go for a retreat if it's something that you just can't get a handle on. That's why we have retreats and why we have opportunity for people to go for a retreat when they need. So our anger, while it can be one of the most painful, it can also be a really clear opportunity to take a big step in your training. 10, do not debase the three treasures. Delusion. Saying, well, you know, that's not that important right now. And it can run the gamut of just being disrespectful of religious things, and being disrespectful of people who are religious, not recognizing the sincerity of religious people, if they happen to be practicing a different faith than your own, or, you know, thinking that you're a better Buddhist than all the other Buddhists. Do not debase the three treasures. Don't fool yourself. Delusion. Don't fool yourself. Don't make a fool of yourself. All the Buddhas have received and carefully preserved the above three treasures, the three pure collective precepts and the 10 precepts. They have received them, they're open, trusting, and they carefully preserve them and put them into practice. And they keep trying. If you accept these precepts wholeheartedly, the highest enlightenment will be yours. And this is the undestroyable Buddhahood, which was understood, is understood, and will be understood in the past, present, and future. The importance of taking your training seriously, doing it wholeheartedly. Even when it may not feel like you're being wholehearted. I mean, you know, sometimes we get distracted and wonder what we were doing. But the important thing again is to keep trying. And that itself is wholeheartedness. The undestroyable Buddhahood. There is that within each of us that whatever we may feel like cannot be harmed. And still, we need to keep our training going. Knowing that you can't be harmed can lead people to do all sorts of things, thinking that now they're enlightened and don't have to worry about the consequences of what they do anymore. And it's important to understand that at heart there is that within you that is true, that is sound and cannot be harmed. And you can recognize that in everyone and everything. Buddhism cannot be harmed as a religion, fundamentally. Yes, people can do things that leave others confused, but fundamentally, no matter when it is, in the past, the present, and the future, there is that which is stable and sound and is a real refuge. Is it possible that any truly wise person would refuse the opportunity to attain to such heights? I think that's primarily an encouragement, saying, yeah, you can do something wise. Go ahead, do it. The Buddha has clearly pointed out to all living beings that whenever these precepts are truly accepted, Buddhahood is reached. Every person who accepts them becoming the true child of Buddha. And in our precepts ceremony, at the 10 precepts retreat, we have a ceremony where we demonstrate that. Those who have taken the precepts take their seats on the top of the altar, and the community of the Sangha circumambulates them as Buddhists, becoming the true child of Buddha. And I think that becoming the true child of Buddha is, you know, it's beginning your training. And so there's never a time when you're not new in some way. When you're not starting over. Within these precepts dwell the Buddhas, enfolding all things within their unparalleled wisdom. There is no distinction between subject and object for any who dwell herein. So within these precepts dwell the Buddhas. What is the mandala? It's the precepts. It's what the Buddha sits still within that circle. Enfolding all things within their unparalleled wisdom. Nothing's excluded. No distinction between subject and object. Is there anything that you can't recognize as something that helps you or can teach in some way? All things, earth, trees, wooden posts, bricks, stones, become Buddhas once this refuge is taken. Once you find your true refuge, you recognize it in everyone and everything. You see it in yourself, you see it in others. There isn't a division between self and other, subject and object. You recognize it. And sometimes that recognition takes real hard work. It's not like, ah, now I can coast. It still, you know, it still takes effort. From these precepts come forth such a wind and fire that all are driven into enlightenment when the flames are fanned by the Buddha's influence. This is the merit of non-action and non-seeking, the awakening to true wisdom. We've seen what wind and fire can do and how destructive it can be. And in this case, that wind and fire is destroying all our illusions. All those cherished, lovely, wonderful illusions is burning them down. And there very much can and will be a time when that happens. If not sooner, when you die and everything that you relied on is not there anymore. You can't bring it with you. All are driven into enlightenment when the flames are fanned by the Buddha's influence. What's the Buddha's influence? It's the spirit of the precepts. When you reach that point where keeping the precepts is so urgent that, you know, you're hanging on for dear life to the precepts. You don't want to break them, however fiercely you may be tempted to. And that's how you're driven into enlightenment. You hang on for dear life. This is the merit of non-action and non-seeking. You can't do this by your own will. Non-action and non-seeking, just sitting with no deliberate thought, just acting without sort of acting from a set of standards and ideals. Just acting in a way that keeps to the precepts. Even if you don't recognize that you're keeping the precepts, you're just doing what needs to be done, and you do recognize it when you're breaking them. What do? When you break them, you bring yourself back to center. The awakening to true wisdom. And while these precepts start with faith and trust in the three treasures, and then talk about the three collective precepts, and then go into the restraints, you could say, do not kill, do not steal, do not be proud of yourself. There is a positive side to each precept. Do not kill. What's the positive side? Respecting life. Helping something or someone when they're in danger. Doing what you can to help them to live. And sometimes that you know, it's like the automobile accident that you avert or avoid that nobody much notices. There's a positive side in that it has helped life to go on. So the next chapter, the awakening to the mind of the Bodhisattva, goes into much more depth and detail about that positive side of what comes out of keeping the precepts. It goes much more in detail about doing good for others. So, the precepts. You can't really separate the precepts from contrition. You can't really separate it from coming face to face with changeableness. You can't really separate it from acting for the good of others and from gratitude.